дезориентация всполохами. Знай, до гробовой доски будет помниться. Возвращаться с полуночными шорохами. А мы одним миром скованы, как одни все стальной цепью вязаны. Вращающий тугой ворот истории герои грошовых бульварных рассказов. Мы в перманентном поиске, чем обезболиться. Но от наркоза только рези пронзительнее. Перепробовано все, но не становится легче. Этот край проклят спасителями, но край до краев наполнен вершителями. Судьбы тесным клубком серпентария переплетены в узоры столь удивительные. Лабиринты людских бестиариев, где мы, каждый сам себя потихонечку убиваем и не ждем эвтаназию. Спросил, когда этот дахау закончится, но в ответ тишина камер газовых и стеклянный глаз циклопа камеры. Не мигая взгляд, в затылок винчивает. Ноги не хотят идти, будто каменные. Несмотря на это, был назван зачинщиком во дворе среди тел и зловония. Ухмыляюсь конвою сутулиному, поднимал глаза к небу бездонному. Дождь хлестал тело острыми струями.
This is Cable Community Radio, 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM, and this is Mike Crenshaw. You are listening to Culture in Motion, and Althea has been so kind to reach out to me while I'm on the road in Moscow, Russia, and have a conversation literally about culture in motion. What's up, Althea?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
It's late there in Moscow, I know.
Yeah, I'm in Moscow. It's about 3 in the morning. And my jet lag, I was sleeping deeply, and then I woke up, and now we're making this radio happen.
Yeah, jet lag will do that to you. So you're in Moscow. Tell me about the trip that you're on right now.
I was invited to participate in a hip-hop cultural exchange trip here in Moscow. I'll be here for a week. I'll come home on the 14th, and this trip is actually directly related to the work I did on the African hip-hop caravan in Zimbabwe, Tanzania, South Africa, and Kenya. Doing that work for 3 years in a row allowed me to be invited to an international hip-hop conference in 2016 at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, called the Trinity International Hip-Hop Festival. And it was there that I met my comrade Sergey, who's actually from Russia. And he does a lot of work with hip-hop culture and education and cultural activism here in Russia, working with disadvantaged youth and impoverished communities across the country. And he informally invited me back in 2016 when I met him. And then just in the past few weeks, this trip actually materialized. So big shout out to From the Exit, NGO here in Russia. That's Sergey is the head of that organization.
Very cool. I feel like you don't really usually conflate hip hop with Russia or Eastern Europe.
You know, so one of the things that I've been able to learn, being as fortunate as I have been to travel, not only in Africa but in Cuba and Germany, and now Russia, is that, you know, this culture is everywhere. And not only is the commercial rap music with big superstars who talk about being rich and partying, not only is that part of hip hop everywhere in every society, but there's also this underground that is more engaged in the everyday lives of young people who are striving to have something better as part of their lived reality. And so that tends to be the level on which I connect with people. And the network is vast, and in some sense it's vast more in the sense of how much geography is covered. And when I say the network, I'm talking about cultural activists who do community work, who do education, who are also artists. But even though this work spans the globe, once you get engaged in that community, you'll find that there's really one degree of separation between people and Europe and Africa, the United States, South America, and so on. The person who invited me to Germany in 2015 was somebody that I met who's part of the hip hop caravan. I met them in South Africa. And I was able to go to Cuba also as a representative of the African hip hop caravan, somebody who'd been on the hip hop caravan. And a long-term goal for me is to actually be able to support artists that I've worked with in different countries in Africa to, you know, be able to do some of the global appearances and engagements and get more of them to the United States. Mama C's been from Tanzania, has been to the United States often, but I'm hoping to get more artists from the caravan to be able to come and do events in, say, Portland and other cities.
Right. So you're in Moscow. What have you been doing while you've been there?
So today was the first day. Well, it's now moving into the next day. I got here at about 6 a.m. Yesterday morning on the 7th. And I spent the day meeting with my host and eating really good food and resting. So there was a breakfast that we had with some of the hosts that are part of us being here, people from the American Embassy as well. And then, I rested. And then we went out to Red Square, which we're staying in a hotel about 2 miles from Red Square. And that involved us walking a series of blocks and then taking the metro or the underground, basically the subway. And those two experiences between walking around in Red Square and this area in the city center and taking the underground public transit, the train, allowed me to see not only the tourist attractions that I grew up seeing in National Geographic, you know, the Kremlin and Red Square with its old-time churches, what some people would call ice cream churches, that have the spires that are inspired by Islamic culture in the region, that kind of almost look like ice cream cults, like soft serve cults from Derry.
Yeah.
You know, seeing those buildings was really cool. It was fascinating. And then also just to see like everyday people and to see like how people carry themselves, the working people going to and from their jobs and their style and their fashion and their demeanor. I always love people watching. And I must say, before I got here, a lot of people would say, be careful. Don't go out by yourself. It's really dangerous. And there's a lot of predatory behavior from thugs and neo-fascists. And it's very racist. You know, we hear a lot about being black over here. And so I must say that being black in Moscow is a lot like everyday life in Portland, Oregon. It really didn't catch me off guard because looking around, the demographics are so similar to what I see in Portland.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious about, you know, how does it feel to be there when the U.S. and Russia are sort of polarized politically, often pitted against each other?
You know, these things, I've been in my lifetime, you know, as somebody who's soon to be 50 years old, I recall there's always been this tension between the United States and Russia, whether it was in the Cold War or the years that followed, you know, after the Berlin Wall fell, and then the years that followed when Russia made its transition from the socialist republic that it once was into basically a capitalist state that it is now. And a lot of people don't realize that Russia is more of a capitalist, operating under more of a capitalist economic system right now. The memory from the Cold War and the propaganda against Russia being socialist, communist, and a threat, therefore a threat to democracy and a threat to United States power globally and domestically, all that propaganda is still part of how people think about Russia. So when you say Russia, people often, the first thing that comes up in their mind is communism. Mm-hmm. But that's actually not the economic system that's working right now on the ground. And so when I'm here on the streets, I'm just another human being in an urban metropolis that has, you know, close to 12 million people. I'm talking about Moscow specifically. When I found out I was coming, I did have questions about, well, the U.S. Embassy is involved in this cultural exchange program. They came in later. They weren't there. They weren't involved at first. It's important to say that this effort was created by artists who work in nonprofits that serve communities. U.S. Embassy came in last minute and kind of helped with some of the structure and giving some resources. But because of that, I had some reservations because I was like, am I being used? Is my artistic diplomacy being used in a way by the state where I'm being maneuvered without a clear understanding of what interests are at play? And then, you know, that question entered my mind. But when I'm here with the artists building community and looking at the itinerary and imagining the work that we're here to do over the next week, that's what takes over. And I'm just immersed in, you know, what we have to accomplish while we're here. And for that, I'm grateful. So however it might be used or viewed by people who actually aren't on the ground doing the work with us, I'm not sure about what control I have over that and how much concern and energy I put into that. The other thing, I don't know, I'm going on about, you know, answering this question, but the other thing I think about often when I get to travel is that I've been all over the world to many countries that people in the U.S. and the West are told, have been told, are dangerous places to be, whether it's for terrorism or whether it's for nationalist movements inside of the country, or whether it's just white supremacy telling lies about who should be safe to travel to what places. And one thing I notice is that wherever I'm at, I seldom see violence. I seldom see people not getting along, and if ever. I've never been involved in any particular conflict based on political ideology and the country that I was born in and that I'm traveling from, being the United States. I've never been targeted, so to speak, just because of somebody's political ideals or affiliations. So that's not a lot of the way that we view the world based on these conflicts that are really generated by political interests, for political interests, and supported by media, is not the reality you face when you're on the ground, you know? And I know we can turn on a news report and hear about people who, dozens of people who might have been killed anywhere, you know, on Earth today as a result of these conflicts that are created. But that's actually not my experience. I often experience more of a peaceful relationship with folks.
Right. So what else is planned for your trip?
We've got a pretty packed itinerary. There's different cultural institutions and schools that we're making appearances at and doing speaking engagements and talking about the role that hip-hop plays in cultural exchange and international diplomacy. And then there's a few performances and at different locations. And it's, I'm sorry, because Russian language has its own alphabet. It's pretty confusing for me to say the names and locations that are on the promotional material. So the best that I've been able to do is get digital copies of flyers that has the list of events, the where's and the when's, the names and addresses and dates, and then post it to social media. So for listeners, if you want to follow and you actually, you know, are interested in what we're talking about, you can follow me on Instagram at Mike Crenshaw, MICCRENSHAW, at MICCRENSHAW. And I'll get some stuff up on Twitter too. That would be my Twitter handle as well, where you can kind of see the type of events that we're doing. Then there's Sergey is the host, one of our hosts, and he works with youth. So we're going to be working with some youth that he works with. There's a group of young women who are producing some hip hop songs with social consciousness involved in the lyrics, and they've actually been recording a video. So what I'm hoping to do while I'm here is, I just wrote my verse. He sent me the beat earlier this evening. I wrote my verse. I'll go record my verse in his recording studio that's in a semi-rural area outside of Moscow, and then we'll record the video, my part of the video that'll be edited in. And I'm really excited about that because, you know, for all the stuff that's publicized that involves me speaking and the other artists I'm with, like Boo and Murray Foreman, to an audience and more official events where there's almost a separation between us and the audience, the most exciting stuff I get to do is to go into the schools and the community centers and have this person-to-person relationship with the artists and with the younger people, because to me that's where the real integrity is, because it's when you actually form a bond that could potentially create like a real friendship, like somebody that you're going to know for the rest of your life. And then also when at the center of that relationship is creating art together, so that you emerge from the experience with something you can then share with the world. That's like a powerful thing, and it's really exciting. So I'm stoked for that.
Wow. So you talked a little bit about how hip hop has similar roots, you know, wherever you are in the world. Have you experienced any differences when dealing with like Russian hip hop, for example?
You know, the similarities I mentioned before, the type of cats that I get to work with globally are often on the same wavelength that I've been on for most of my career, as far as socially conscious lyricism and awareness and a connection, understanding that our connection to hip-hop culture and the role that we play and the space that we take up in the culture is tied to responsibility and accountability and doing work to improve the lives of not only ourselves but of people in the communities that we live in, both locally, you know, nationally, and the countries we live in, and then globally, because it is ultimately a global movement for change for the better. And it's art and culture through which we engage through the music and the movement of the dance and the rhythm and the thoughts and ideas that are shared in the consciousness and a community that's created when people come together. One thing I will say that is specifically different that I've noticed, not only in East Germany, in Halle, where I was at in 2015 for the Breathe In Breakout Festival, also here in Moscow, and in a lot of places in Africa as well, especially in Zimbabwe, is that all the elements of hip-hop culture, when I say all the elements, I'm going to narrow it down to four specific elements. B-boying or b-girling, as far as the dance, MCing, the rapper, DJing, and actually graffiti, which some would argue predates hip-hop. It does predate hip-hop, but specific styles of graffiti that hip-hop gave rise to. All those elements are far more respected as a full experience of hip-hop culture, whereas in the United States, we tend to think of hip-hop solely in terms of commercial rap artists and big rappers that have become rich and famous. Here, when I'm working in the underground artistic hip-hop community, it's not uncommon to see and meet artists who are not only b-boys or b-girls, but who also are sick graffiti artists, who also are DJs, and who also are beat makers. And often here, MCing is like kind of like almost like an afterthought. It's almost like the last thing that people wind up doing as part of their expression. A lot of the people I meet here lead with dance, they lead with DJing, and they lead with visual art and graffiti. I noticed when I was riding the subway from the airport to the center of Moscow where we're staying, just the amazing graffiti. And unfortunately, because the train was so crowded and my battery was low, I couldn't get a good video. So I'm hoping that before I leave, I get to do some video of some of these walls that line the train tracks that are just like incredible as far as like the colorful murals and graffiti styles and hand styles that you see on these walls. And it's some of what I've been able to see in Europe as far as graffiti culture reminds me of when I was a kid and first went to the South Bronx, you know, to Hunts Point and rode on the trains, because that's where my stepdad was from. And I actually saw graffiti culture and hip-hop graffiti culture in its infancy and got to see the way that it turned the city landscape from something that looked desolate into something that was like psychedelic and beautiful. And so to be able to see the way that that culture has been developed in parallel and actually surpassed a lot of what you see in cities in the United States, to see that here in Europe is inspiring. because hip hop lives here in a way that is often forgotten about in the United States in urban areas, and that people have to fight to sustain. And frankly, it doesn't seem as relevant, these other elements of hip hop culture, in the United States in a lot of urban communities, as they do seem here.
Right. So you've talked a lot about hip hop facilitating cultural exchange, cultural understanding. What is the potential for hip hop in facilitating cultural exchange, do you think, if it were like radically expanded?
Now, in looking at the potential for radical cultural change, or for hip hop to be able to move things and challenge people's consciousness to maybe evolve more radically, I'm going to think about the term radically and think about change and remind us that radical doesn't just mean something sensational that is a soundbite of black bloc activity where people are breaking things, like smashing windows of Starbucks or banks or whatever. A lot of people have been conditioned to think that that's what radical means, or people associate the term radical with Islamic terrorism, right? Or what gets called Islamic terrorism, when we all know, or many of us know, that that actually isn't a representation of Islam, and that a lot of the terrorism and violence is funded by interests that actually are not radical at all. So when I think radical, I think about root cause of conditions. I think about the root cause of what we face in society that we want to change, because people who are suffering, their lives are interconnected with the ecosphere and the biosphere and the lives of species of other forms of life other than human beings that are also suffering, and the future of all life on Earth is at stake. And so when I think of radical, I think of what we can do with our time and our energy and our consciousness that gets to the root cause of the conditions that we face. And so how can hip hop influence social change, cultural change? How can hip hop influence consciousness and behavior in a way that we can actually make radical changes that actually have an effect on the lives we lead in the present and positive outcomes for the future? And I think that because hip hop in its poetic and lyrical traditions is an oral tradition, and it is a folk tradition, and it's something that's created by the people, and it's meant to speak for the people and to the people, and it's created by people coming together and sharing thoughts and ideas in community, we have the power with this mode of expression to communicate our highest aspirations for what we want to see. We have the power within this mode of expression to share the reflection and the celebration of the work that we're here to accomplish, and to dream out loud about the work that we want to accomplish that we haven't yet accomplished or committed to. And if we look at, you know, hip hop that is commercial as opposed to radical, we see this all the time. We hear this narrative about people expressing their wildest dreams and aspirations to get rich, to be wealthy, to be famous, to be powerful, to be respected. And we see the evidence of that in the trajectories of individuals who've been able to make themselves rise from this rags to riches, you know, kind of path in their own lives, right? People come from the ghetto and they don't have much, and then they hustle and they do whatever it takes, and then they get everything they ever dreamed of having. You know, that's the narrative that Jay-Z is out there, you know, supporting, and so many other artists that have come before and that will come after. And a lot of young people who want to be SoundCloud rappers or who want to be involved in hip hop, and whether it's in fashion or beat making or being MCs, that's their dream too. And that's the commercial capitalist aspect of the culture, because that's there too. But that same power that we have to transform something from something that's meager, from something that's humble, into something that's mighty, something that's powerful, something that can move thousands of people, something that can move generations of people and have a global effect, that same power is there in the radical sense. right? So there are ways that we get to use our thoughts and our expression and our creativity and our imagination to create the world that we want to see. And what some of the work that I'm here to do is to figure out, how do we get people to engage in the work of creating the world we want to see, the world that we deserve, without capitalism being so central to the effort? Because as long as capitalism is the only means through which we engage making our dreams come true, then we're stuck in the same processes that actually threaten all life on Earth. Because that's what the infinite growth paradigm and the profit motive, that's what capitalism empowers and brings to light in a way that has total disregard for the existence of anything organic. So right. if it can't be exploited, it's not worth anything. And so at what point do we as human beings take sovereignty back into our own hands and decide, you know, look, I'm going to have to work to get money. I know this. For me to have food and clothes and shelter and hopefully health care, I'm going to have to participate in a system that is exploiting me and creating everywhere. But at the same time, I'm also the sovereign being that has my own right, my own power, my own imagination and agency. And so with the energy that I have that's not completely devoted to the system of destruction, I have to be able to create something that's more powerful and more hopeful, you know, and more beneficial. And so that's the work we're doing with hip hop, you know, and I'm proud to be an individual who's part of a collective who's doing that work all over the world. And so as long as I'm engaged in that work, then there's some kind of hope for me, because I get to do what I love in a way that is bigger than me and that feels good, and we come together and we enjoy ourselves as part of this process.
Right. Very cool. Well, Mike, do you want to shout out what you're up to one more time? Maybe give those social media handles for people interested in following your Moscow trip?
Yeah, follow the trip on Instagram. I've been lazy about my Twitter, but I'll get up there today, later. So follow my trip on at Mike Crenshaw, MICCRENSHAW on Instagram, and I'll continue to post pictures and stories and video. And I'm really excited to be here. I wanna give a shout out to From the Exit NGO here in Moscow, and Sergey and Mary McBride from the embassy, the other artists on the trip, DJ Boo, as well as Murray Foreman, the academic from Massachusetts. And looking forward to touching down and recording some music with people and recording some video with folks that we'll later be able to share you know, on YouTube, and hopefully make it part of the KBOO archives. And thank you for listening, KBOO listeners, to Culture in Motion. This is, again, me, Mike Crenshaw, coming to you often with other guests twice a month on Wednesdays from 5:30 to 6. And thank you, Althea, for making time to talk to me across time zones and get this in.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Right on.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center. Vitale directs the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project. He wrote The End of Policing. He demonstrates that the great expansion of police authority has come to exacerbate the very problems they're supposed to solve. He discusses how to counter the warrior mentality and police reliance on force and weaponry, and describes actually operating successful alternatives. But he insists that no reform will substantially succeed unless this country deals with deeply entrenched inequalities and injustice. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Imagine a world beyond policing. That's no impossible dream. More information can be found on KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I've been a ramp, all my romp and rolling days. A railroad boy with nothing for to do.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2019-20 concert season. Bill Staines is the featured artist for the upcoming October 11 concert. Bill Staines is a singer-songwriter whose career has spanned 5 decades, and his songs have been recorded by many well-known artists. That's Bill Staines in concert, Friday, October 11 at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Time is now 6 o'clock. Up next is Right to Survive.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to another listening session of Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 95 FM on your radio dial. And we have a packed house and a good topic for today.